Hi all, Lily here. We've talked about how much we love Needed, but one product I really leaned on, especially through my VBAC pregnancy, was their prenatal collagen. I love how simple and clean it is. It's pure hydrolyzed bovine collagen, nothing extra, with a totally neutral flavor that mixes seamlessly into drinks or food. Collagen is especially important because our natural production starts slowing in our early 20s, and pregnancy, stress, and postpartum recovery only increase those needs. It's rich in amino acids like glycine and proline, which are key building blocks for collagen production in the body. It was such an easy, supportive addition for me during my pregnancy and recovery, and it's another reason why we trust Needed so much. You can get 20% off with code TVL at checkout. Head to thisisneeded.com today, and you can even stack it on top of their new subscription discount as well. So that's thisisneeded.com with code TVL for 20% off. Hello, Women of Strength. Welcome back to the VBAC Link. This is Lily. I am a little under the weather today, so my voice sounds a little groggy, but I'm so excited to be here today and to hear from Ashley, our guest. And I'm joined by my amazing, as always, co-host, Paige. Hi, Paige.
Hello.
All right. Well, before we get into it, I would just love to do a little catch up. Tell me about your week. I feel like I haven't seen you in a long time.
I know. I'm glad that we have this hard stop with the recording so we can catch up. Well, the big news over here is that there was the Dancing with the Stars finale, and we are big Robert Irwin fans over here. So we are prepping for our trip to Australia in just a couple weeks, and I am very much educating my boys on the Irwin family. So that was a big, exciting thing. And maybe the other thing is a little TMI, a lot of TMI, but this is a birth podcast.
It's okay.
So Jack turned one, and my breastfeeding goal with all my babies is a year. And so we kind of, there's like this natural weaning period I've noticed where each of them, about 10 months, they start getting more active, more teeth, and it just is kind of natural. They love bottles. Jack particularly loves his bottle. So we start kind of slowly weaning. And Jack is officially weaned for good. And then I started my period. I'm one of those lucky ones that doesn't have my period while I breastfeed. So I started my period this week. And it was like kind of emotional because, yeah, that means it's really the end. And anyway, oh my gosh, wow, yeah, getting emotional. But just gratitude for my body, for breastfeeding, and for my babies. And I know it's so personal for everybody, like everyone's relationship with breastfeeding. But for me, it was just such a joy, something that I could hold on to. My supply was always wonderful and something that I just loved. So, like, I'm at peace also with it being over. And I think that's so personal when people decide the hybrid of pumping and formula bottles, when to be done. But I feel at peace with it, but also just like sad and thankful. Yeah. So,
wow.
How about you?
So special. Good job. Well done, my friend. Job well done.
Thanks. Thank you.
I have a feeling that we will also be done soon. It happened at the end of my pregnancy with Breck, and I got really sick. Not pregnancy, but in my breastfeeding journey that I got really sick. And it just kind of petered out from there. So yeah, we'll see if my supply lasts for through whatever this ick I have is. But no, I was at a birth this weekend just yesterday. It was so amazing. I just told you this off recording, but I'm going to tell you again because I think it's so cool. My client, she really wanted to get an epidural. This was her second baby, and part of the traumatic experience from her first pregnancy was that she was denied an epidural for a really long time. And so pain management was really important to my client. And she was also wanting to like hold off as long as she could. And she's just coping so well. And like me and her nurse had a little powwow in the hallway, and I was like, I don't know, she's doing a really great job, but I don't want her ever to feel like, well, my team never even offered me an epidural, and that was like the most important thing to me. So went in and was like, hey, what do you think about the epidural? And she was like, I'm so at peace, I don't even need it. And I just think like that's such a testament to like, A, who she is as a person, and like she's had such a redemptive experience, and B, like it's why you hire a doula, right? Like, you have better pain management outcomes. And so like not getting an epidural isn't necessarily a traumatic thing because she was coping really well and she was well supported. And she just like beautifully birthed her baby afterwards, she was like, what's the shortest birth you've ever been at? And I was like, I think this one. Which was really fun.
Oh, that is so amazing. It's amazing to know what we can do with the options that are there. Totally. And when we're not denied options, we feel like we're in the driver's seat. And there's also this narrative that like having the epidural in the back of your head will mean that you will ask for one and you will give in. And so that proves that that's false. Like you can have that.
She didn't even bring it up. I had to be like, hey,
you really wanted this. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So that's so great. Yay. Go Lily. I'm so excited.
It was super fun. So outside of being sick, we're gonna keep trekking along. So, all right. Well, our guest Ashley today is actually in the waiting room right now. So Paige, do you have a review of the week for us that we can read before we head into the world of birth stories?
This review is from Brecklin on Apple Podcast. It was left at the beginning of this year. Titled, This Podcast Changed My Perspective on Birth. After I had my C-section in April 2022, I thought I would always have to have repeat C-sections. I found this podcast and started binging every episode while I was pregnant with my second. My confidence in my body grew with every story I listened to, and I learned how to advocate for myself with the informative statistics. I loved hearing the powerful VBAC stories, the repeat C-section stories, the CBAC stories, and even the VBA2C, VBA MC stories. Hearing strong women talk about their birth has become an obsession of mine. I'm so glad I found this podcast. With that being said, after doing everything by the books to achieve a VBAC, I unfortunately did not succeed. However, because of this podcast, I was able to have a healing CBAC. I also will not give up on my VBAC journey because I know the statistics and have heard the wonderful success stories of VBA2C. I am so grateful to have found this podcast and Facebook page because this community is so strong and understanding. So thank you for sharing that, Brecklin. We're so happy to have you in our community. And we believe in you for a future VBA2C. We know you are strong enough to do it. We're just cheering for you. And I'm so glad that you're able to have a healing experience for your second. And grateful that the podcast contributed to that in some small way. So if you have not yet left a review and this podcast has helped you in a similar way, like it helped Brecklin, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can also go to our Facebook page and leave a review. You can send us an email at info@thebebacklink.com and we might read your review on the podcast.
Yay. All right. Well, after our intro, we'll be back with our guest, Ashley.
Hi, I'm Lily.
And I'm Paige. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast.
We're moms and doulas who know firsthand that birth after cesarean isn't always straightforward. I'm a miscarriage and ectopic mom who went on to have a hospital water birth VBAC.
And I've had two CBACs and a planned maternal assisted cesarean.
Our experiences may be different, but our mission is the same, to make birth after cesarean better.
On this podcast, you'll hear powerful stories of VBACs, repeat cesareans, and CBACs from women around the world.
We'll also bring in expert insight, practical tools, and encouragement to help you feel informed and supported as you plan your next birth.
Whether you're preparing for a VBAC, choosing a repeat cesarean, or simply exploring your options, this space is for you.
Because every story matters, and we're here to remind you that you've got options, you've got support, and you're never alone.
The VBAC Link is storytelling by nature. The stories on this podcast do not represent a universally best or safest option for everyone.
This podcast is intended to encourage and inform. It does not replace individualized advice from a qualified medical provider.
All right. Hello, Women of Strength. Welcome back. We are here with our beautiful and amazing guest, Ashley, and I am going to read just a little bit about her and then we'll hand the floor over to her. So Ashley is a wife, a mom of four boys, lots of chaos and lots of common with Paige, and the creator
for behind
And she's the creator behind the parenting strategy. After feeling overwhelmed and lost in her own motherhood journey, she rebuilt her confidence by learning simple but intentional ways to be more calm, connected, and at ease. Today, she teaches other moms the same framework to raise calm, confident, and capable kids so family life feels lighter, more enjoyable, and a whole lot less stressful. All right. So Ashley, we will turn the time over to you. We're so excited to hear your stories.
Yes, I'm so excited to be here too. Like, thank you so much for opening this up for moms and being able to tell their story. Like, sometimes it's just, you don't really get that chance to do it so much. And when you do, it is healing. So thank you for providing that space. But so for me, I currently live in Orlando, Florida, but I've had all three of my births in New York. I am a bonus mom to an older teen son. So that's where the four boys comes in. So definitely well-rounded and a lot of chaos going on there. But yeah, I had that dream of like being a wife and a mom and just like every other, you know, since a little girl, just like every other woman, like, oh my God, I can't wait for that. It's going to be such a beautiful time, you know, and like you get everything you pray for, you become a wife, you get pregnant and you're like, oh, this is going to be great. And my pregnancy was great. Like I had a great pregnancy. I had really no issues at all. And then right up around like 39 weeks, like I kind of started leaking fluid. And so I was induced with my first son and that resulted in a C-section. And then I ended up unexpectedly getting pregnant again 9 months later. And I cried for like 2 months straight. It was very stressful. I'll explain why, but yeah, unexpectedly 9 months later. And I vowed like, oh my gosh, nope, we're not going to do this again. We're going to have a VBAC this time. And I found your Facebook community actually and joined the Facebook group. Yeah. And so I learned so much and then ended up having a VBAC with my second son. And then my third son, I was planning on trying to have a home birth, like a home water birth in Florida. And that just didn't work out like that. God said, no, we have some other plans. And I had to fly to New York actually for 2 months to go and have my third son because I had placenta accreta. I needed to go to like a trauma hospital, you know, ones who really specialize in that. Yeah, very scary experience. And it was a bummer because I'm like, oh my gosh, I fought so hard, I worked so hard for that VBAC. And then it ended in accreta after. So yeah, that's a whole nother, you know, journey in itself. But yeah, so I guess like going back to my first, I was induced and I labored on Pitocin. Like they just kept increasing the Pitocin, kept increasing it, increasing it, increasing it. And we ended up getting to like 18 or something. It was like super high dose, super painful. And I did that for like 11 hours. They did give me not Cytotec. It was Cervidil, I believe. Cervidil. And so waited with that and nothing happened, didn't progress. And I was just like 2 centimeters the whole time. And even after doing the Pitocin, still 2 centimeters, just nothing was happening. I was just sitting there in pain. And I remember at one point, the doctors said over the loudspeaker, stop all of the Pitocin in everyone's rooms. The ER, the OR is getting too packed. And so I'm like, this is not a good sign. And that's kind of scary. Number one, I'm on Pitocin. Two, like, what do you mean the OR is getting packed? So that was just very, very scary to hear that. And then my doctor came in and he's like, why is this stopped? He wanted me to go back on it. And at that point, I was like doing it for like 11 hours. I was like, you know what? I think that I just need maybe to just get the epidural so my body could relax and maybe I'll try to progress at that point. And so we did that, did the epidural. It actually didn't work. So I was still in pain. And then at that point, he came to me and he's like, you know what? Right now, it's not an emergency, but maybe we should do a C-section before it gets to an emergency. And, you know, I'm like, first time mom, I don't really know. You know, I didn't really do my research or anything. And I feel like that's kind of one thing that like people leave out and they don't really say too much about, you know, like this is really like something serious, you know, and you kind of have to do a little bit of research so you can be your own advocate and know, you know, certain things going on. So I didn't know anything. And, I was like, okay, you know, like I want my baby to be okay and I want to be okay. So we can do that. So I got the C-section. No one prepares you for the shakes. Like that was so scary. Oh my gosh. I was like, that was too much. It was so scary. And you couldn't even hold your baby because like, you know, your body's shaking so much. I couldn't even hold my son for a while. So that was a little stressful, overwhelming, you know. And then eventually like transitioned and went into the recovery room. And it was maybe like 4 hours later, I ended up like passing a blood clot that was like the size of a peach. And I remember them saying like, oh, if it's anything bigger than a golf ball or something, like you need to let us know and tell us. So I'm like, okay. So I told them. And they were like, okay, we'll just keep an eye on it. So then I said, I'm not feeling too well. And I got up, I went to the bathroom, and as I was coming out, I ended up passing out. And thankfully, my husband was there. So he kind of like helped me like get to the chair and everything. And they called the nurses, and everyone came running in, and they were trying to figure out what was going on. And I was like, I'm not really feeling well. We continued with the day like nothing, you know, it was just like, oh, it's just maybe too much. It's just surgery or whatever. Then my heart started racing so fast. I couldn't breathe. And then I developed a fever. And thankfully, my sister is a labor and delivery nurse. And so she was there in the hospital with us. And they still like just, I was like, and like my incision is like oozing a certain color. Like there's no smell to it, but it's a certain color. And I'm like, I don't really think that like this is right. I'm pretty sure like it shouldn't be this kind of color. Every time someone came in to check, they were like, no, it's fine. It's fine. It's fine. It's looking good. It's looking good. That's all they just kept saying. So finally, I'm like to my sister, I'm like, I think that like, I don't think that's good. I think there's really something wrong. And I had a fever, but it wasn't like classified as a fever. So although I had all the symptoms and I was, you know, freezing cold, my heart was racing, everything, because it didn't reach that like 0.4 or whatever the number was, they didn't classify as a fever. So that meant that they weren't going to really take any kind of like measures to do anything about it. But my sister, like, she really advocated and she really stood up and she's like, no. Like, you guys are going to do something. You're going to do blood work. You're going to do something. We're not going to do that. And I guess because she worked in labor and delivery, they were a little intimidated by like, okay, you know, what could she do or say? So they ended up doing blood work. And then it came back that my uterus was infected. So they ended up like giving me antibiotics, and I'm like, okay. But I'm like, I think that there's still more because my incision is oozing. So like, okay, my uterus is infected, but the incision is still like oozing this particular color. So come to find out, the incision ended up getting infected as well. And so I was in the hospital for like a week. I had to go on medication. I couldn't really breastfeed or anything. And, you know, that was kind of my other thing. I was like, oh, at least I can breastfeed, you know, like my son is latching and everything. At least I could breastfeed. And then once they gave me this medication to go home with, I couldn't breastfeed anymore. So I was, you know, really sad about that. I remember going home and the medication that they gave me, I was laying down and my heart started racing again so fast and I couldn't breathe. And I'm like, I'm at rest right now. There's no reason it should be beating this fast. And it was whatever the medication was that they gave me, but I had to go back to the hospital. They had to run all these tests on me and everything to make sure that everything was okay. And then they swapped out my medication and they're like, just see your doctor on Monday, pretty much. And so I went to go and see the doctor on Monday, and now this was actually my original doctor, because, you know, it's like, you go to a practice to see one particular person, and I hate that. And they're like, oh, it's whoever's on call, you know, like that they started doing that. And so who I wanted to see didn't actually deliver me. It was some guy that I like seen in the office maybe once or something. But when I came back, my actual doctor, she was on vacation, and she's like, oh my gosh, like, I'm so sorry this happened to you. Like, a lot of this did not have to happen. And I like that. It made me so mad because I'm like, what do you mean it didn't have to happen? Like, there was alternatives. There was something else we could have done. And of course, I didn't know because, you know, I'm a first time mom. But she had to reopen my incision there because it was infected. So she had to reopen it, clean out the wound and everything. I had to have a home nurse come to my house for 2 months after to keep cleaning it out and everything. Yeah. And I couldn't like hold my son after, you know, it was just, it was very, very traumatic for me. And I've had a lot of loss in my family. Like, I lost my mom. And so for me to experience that and then to like have this feeling hanging over you, like I could have possibly lost my life and then my son could, you know, grow up without a mom. Like, it just, it was very traumatic. And so I developed like postpartum depression and PTSD and everything. Yeah. And so that was kind of like the whole experience of my first birth with the C-section.
Oh, Ashley. Yeah. That is so much to hold.
It was a lot. It was a lot. Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, I remember asking, because I am a Black woman and there's so much that goes on with that. I remember specifically asking my doctor, like, this is a concern of mine, you know, like, I'm a little worried, you know, because like, is this real? Like, is this something that I really need to worry about? Like, is this real? And she's like, yes, it is something that is real in the workplace, in the workforce and the healthcare system. She's like, it is something that's real. And she's like, but I trust my team. And she's like, so I don't think there's something that you have to worry about here. And it was like, okay, in that moment, it was a little more reassuring. But then to turn around and it's like, this didn't have to happen to you. So it's like, so yeah.
So you were dismissed in ways that you never should have been.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And even like just speaking up for myself, but you know, you're still, you believe that they know what's best. And you know, because you're a first time mom, you don't really know. And so yes, you know your body, but you still doubt and second guess it. And that's what I kept doing when I'm like, when they're telling me constantly, like, no, it's fine. It looks good. It's healing nicely, you know? And I'm like, okay, okay. But there's still that little like voice that keeps saying like, no, something's just not quite, you know? And it's like, you really have to trust that intuition and really, really like believe your instinct.
And that's so infuriating to have to carry that burden into birth with us. We shouldn't have to. And yes, like, we have our intuition and we want to educate ourselves, but ultimately, like, the goal is for our team to take care of us.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry that you had to go through that and that, like Lily said, you were dismissed and just no mom should ever have to go through all those things that you did.
Yeah. But I did have a beautiful, beautiful second experience.
Okay, so tell us about it.
Yes, a little more uplifting. So yeah, I got 9 months later, got pregnant again. And I'm like, oh my gosh, how? I know how, but how? So I was like really, really scared. I wasn't upset because I've always wanted a big family. But I was scared. I was like terrified for my life after the first one. And I'm like, how am I supposed to go through this again? And I just remember saying like, it's so soon after, you know, and this time around, I don't want it to be the same way. And I remember trying to find like a midwife. And I called so many midwives. And this was around like COVID time. So a lot of them retired. They stopped practicing. And the other ones that were still practicing wouldn't take me because I was under, they really wanted it to be 2 years. And I was under that. I was 18. So they were like, this is very risky and we don't feel comfortable taking you. And so that kind of made me even more scared because I'm like, oh my gosh, like, you know, like, what am I going to do? Like, no one wants to take me, but I really don't want to go through this again. But I wanted that midwife experience, you know, where you had someone who truly listened to you and, you know, like treated you like a person and not a number. So I knew I really wanted that route, but I was just struggling and having such a hard time trying to find ones who were VBAC friendly. And I came across one and she was in a hospital and I thought that everything was good and was fine. So like pregnancy was fine. Everything was normal. We were doing just fine. And the closer we got towards the end, and we had talked about it, and I told her my plans, like, I want a VBAC. Like, this is what I want. And told her my plans. And towards the end of it, her tune started shifting a little bit. And then she started kind of saying like, oh, well, it's my, you know, it's the head doctor. So whatever he decides, you know, that's what it will be, you know, and I have to kind of listen to him. So I can't really like call the shots. And so I'm like, okay, so you could be against it, but as long as he says it, then we would have to do that. So I'm like, okay, yeah, that this is not, this is not it either. You know, in that moment, I knew like I really had to step it up and I really had to start like educating myself and researching myself and trying to understand certain things and learn certain things. I hired a doula this time around, which I didn't the first time. And she was very informative. She educated me a lot. I ended up following another doula on Instagram who was great too. I think her name is like Serenity Doula or something like that, but she's really good. And so I like started walking, doing yoga. I was like making sure, like learning the Mal circuit and all these different like things. I was like doing eating dates, drinking red raspberry leaf tea, and just trying to do everything that I could possibly, like even mentally, you know, preparing myself mentally, you know, like I, at that time too, like I broke down with God and I'm like, I'm so sorry that I'm like crying, being so ungrateful for like this opportunity that you're giving me, because there's so many moms who can't have babies. And I'm like, so I'm so sorry that, you know, like I'm treating this moment like this, you know? And I know that was probably like I was allowed to feel how I felt because I did go through a lot, but I just felt like in that moment, like, oh my gosh, there's so many women who can't even have babies. And like, you're pregnant again and you're like crying and worried about that.
It's so hard. And I mean, I'm a lost mom myself. And I think that what I learned along the way is that we can't compare our trauma as being worse than another's. Like there's no, like if you say that you went through something traumatic, you went through something traumatic and you're allowed right. to, you're allowed to be that way. And we all have our hard and our journeys there, but I'm really proud right. of you for continuing to advocate yeah. for what you needed because yeah. that matters too.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Yes. I do agree with you though. It's, that's something that like I had to learn the hard way too, is like my experience was my experience and I'm allowed to feel like there could have been someone who was way worse than mine, but I'm still allowed to grieve that experience and, you know, feel how I felt like with the C-section. I know like I felt less of a mother because I wasn't able to do it, you know, naturally and, you know, and it just, it wasn't a good feeling at all, you know? So it was like a lot of grief surrounding that whole thing too. But yeah, so I, this time around, I'm like, no, I have to keep advocating for myself. I have to learn as much as I can, like do as much as I can, like stay active, you know, eat healthy and everything. And this time I did a lot of different things. And I also like, had to come to the conclusion that at the end of the day, it is whatever, it's God's plan. You know, I can't be so like one way where it's like, you know, where if anything was to happen, I would be so crushed and so hurt again. So I was still open and flexible to like, okay, this is what I really want. But at the end of the day, it's, you know, whatever his will is. So towards the end, she's like, yeah, I don't know, you know, and then she went on a sabbatical to another hospital. And I was at that point, I was 38 weeks. And I'm like, I'm 38 weeks and you go to another hospital for 2 weeks. So now I have to deal with like other people who, you know, I'm like, no, I can't go through this again. And like, I remember just walking out of the hospital, just crying in tears. And I'm like, I have to try to find another doctor. And so at 38 weeks, I like went crazy looking for another doctor. And I knew I wasn't going to be able to get a midwife at that time. So I had to try to find another one. And I think I might have even I think, I don't know if it was in your community that I found another one or something. I can't remember how I came across him, but I ended up finding another doctor and I like called and I'm like, you know, can you take me? And he's like, yeah, he'll take me. So I was like, oh my gosh. And there were so many moms who said he was VBAC friendly and, you know, that, you know, they advocated for him. So I was like, okay, great. So I go see him and he tells me, oh, next week I'm going to Africa. So I'm like, I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. He's like, yeah, I'm going to Africa for a week. So I'm like, okay, so I'm having a talk with my son and I'm like, you better stay in here. Like, you cannot come out yet until he comes back. But during that time, I had to see another doctor during that 39th week. And it was just another doctor in his practice. And I thought everything was going to be fine. But I walk in and this guy was like, the nurses were like, oh, okay, so he wants to check you. And I'm like, no, I'm not feeling any contractions or anything. Like, I'm fine. I don't think that he needs to check me. And so she's like, okay, I'll let him know. So she leaves and she comes back. Well, he really wants to check you because you're 39 weeks. And so he thinks that it's a really good idea for him to do that. And so I was like, no, I'm not feeling anything. So I think I'm okay. So she comes back again and she's like, well, this is your second baby. And so I think that we really should try. So I'm like, I say again, no, I'm okay. So then he comes in and he's like, well, I want to do an ultrasound on you. And he's like, because, you know, you are very close. And he was like, he's like, you are very close to the end. So he's like, and you won't let me check you. So at least I need to do an ultrasound to see, like, you know, where the baby is and kind of get like a little more understanding of your situation. So I'm like, okay. So he does the ultrasound and he's like, oh my gosh, the baby is right here. He's right here. He's all the way down here. And this looks like a big baby. Oh my God. You know, it's a big baby. That's an automatic C-section. And so like, yes, he's like, this baby is an automatic C-section. And he's like, you know, you can have that baby on the drive home. You really need to let me check you. And I'm like, no, I'm okay. And this time around, I was so secure in like what I wanted, what I knew, that I'm like, there's no way. Like, and you're not going to fearmonger me into this at all. And I know that just because it's a big baby does not mean anything. So this time I'm just like standing firm and I'm like, and they were so confused as to like why I did not give in. Like they just could not even grasp me saying no to them. I remember me and my husband like leaving out of the doctor's office and we were laughing because I'm like, that was crazy. Like the amount of times that they harassed us to do that, that was insane. And I was like, but like, had we not known, like I would have been scared and I would have fell into that. And for sure, I would have let him check me and everything. And I'm like, it's just so sad how many people that they do that to and, you know, and they get. And so, yeah, so we drove home and I was just like, that was insane. Like, I can't wait for the other doctors to come back. And he ended up making it back. We went to the chiropractor because he came back at like 40 weeks. Still, baby was still chilling in there. He wasn't ready to come out. So I was like, okay, let me go to the chiropractor because I know that a lot of other moms kind of said that was, you know, something that's helped them. So
you mean he didn't fall out on the
highway, right? No, my husband would have had a heart attack. Oh, he would have been in the hospital for two people if that happened. But no, baby stayed. Went to the chiropractor and I started feeling like a little bit of contractions then, but it wasn't really that much. But I was like, okay, well, something is happening. Something's going, like my body's starting to pick up on these cues and stuff. Like, that's good. And the chiro had told me that like my pelvis wasn't aligned and stuff. And he was saying how like he helped with that and I had some tension and stuff. So he helped relieve that. So baby, I guess, was able to start descending. So that was great. So he's like, you know, do these things at home or whatever. So I'm like, okay. So I'm doing all my curb walking and doing all these different things, squats and everything. I went to go see the chiro again. And when I left that day, I started feeling the contractions. They started picking up. and they started getting stronger and stronger. And that night I had called my sister and I'm like, oh, I think that you need to come tonight. Like, can you come over? And so she comes over and called the doula. And I'm like, no, they're really, really starting to pick up. So I remember just like laboring at home with my husband. I'm just on the birth ball and trying to do all that. And I'm like, I want to wait as long as possible, but I'm still like a little nervous because of the whole experience and, you know, just being scared and the whole idea of the rupture and all of that stuff. So it's still a lot of thoughts kind of going through my head, but I'm like, no, I can do this. I can do this. And so, laboring at home, and then my, doula's like, she's like, no, they're not coming consistently every, you know, 2 minutes or so. She's just like, I don't think that we need to go to the hospital. And I'm like, no, I like, these are strong. Like, I think I was like, I don't think I can take it anymore. I was like, I think we need to go to the hospital. But because they still weren't coming so strong, she was like, she didn't know if it was like me just not like wanting to give in or not. She was like, well, why don't you take a bath, like a warm bath? And then after that, let's see. So I took a warm bath and they subsided. And so I was like, oh, okay, fine. I had my doctor's appointment for a well baby check because I was 40 and 5 at that point. And so he had to do like a well baby check. And so we drive over there and I'm like, at this point, I'm still kind of chilling. They were coming maybe like once every 20, 30 minutes or something, but they weren't really intense or anything. And I get there and he checks the baby. And then he's like, Ashley, what? Ashley, get your butt over to the hospital right now. And I was like, what are you talking about? And he was like, you're not having contractions. I was like, not really. And he's like, you're 8 centimeters. So I was like, yes. He's like, you're 8 centimeters. I'm like, what? Like, are you serious? So he's like, do not stop to get no food. Do not do anything. Just get over straight to the hospital now. So I'm like, okay. But I was so hungry. I was so hungry. I was like, okay, babe, I know what he said, but we're going to have to stop to get some food because I remember last time they ain't let me eat for a very long time. So I said, this time I need to have some energy and we need just a little bit. So when I got to the hospital, the doctor was like, well, I know it takes 30 minutes for me to get from the doctor's office to the hospital and you got here in like an hour. And he's like, so I don't know what you ended up doing, but anyway, so it was funny. But we get there and the contractions still just, they weren't really coming like often at all. They weren't really that intense. There was like no change. Nothing was happening. I think I bumped up to maybe like 9 centimeters, but still nothing really was going on. And he was like, you know what? Let's try to do a practice push. I was like, whatever that means. Like, I don't know what that means, but you know, okay. And so I tried pushing and I guess like he like went to feel like how strong I guess I was or something, or to see like if I kind of knew what I was doing. And of course I had no idea what I was doing at all. And then he left and still no change. Nothing was happening. And then he came back to me. He said, okay, you know what? He said, I think that in my experience, he's like, I have done a lot of VBACs. And in my experience, I think that we should do a low dose of Pitocin. And he was like, I know you don't want to, but he was like, I feel like that is what helps kind of get things moving when we're at this point. And he was like, we won't increase it. We'll just do a low, slow dose of Pitocin. So I was like, okay. You know, I had to think about it, but I was like, okay, we'll do that. Like, as long as we're keeping that, but we'll do that. And so we did that. We started the Pitocin and then really not much changed even with that. Maybe they started coming like every 8 minutes, but it still really wasn't that much of a change. And the intensity still like it wasn't really that intense. So he comes in and he's like, I think we're ready. I think we're good to go. And I'm like, well, I don't understand. My contractions are not coming every 2 minutes and they're not really that strong. Like, what do you mean? And he was like, in my experience, he was like, I've seen people do it with no contractions at all. And he was like, everybody's body is different. And he was like, and so sometimes you can't go so textbook to like, it has to be this and it has to be that. And he was like, I've seen so many situations and things happen. So I was like, okay. So he's like, you're strong enough to push. And he's like, and I really believe that you can do it. So I was like, okay. I was like, look at me because I'm not going through this again. So I'm like, you look at me, you tell me that. And he's like, no, he's like, trust me. I really, really believe it. And so because so many other women kind of like said who he was and what he cared about, and he told me kind of what he cared about, I was like, okay, I will give you guys one more shot. And so they set up everything and we started going, and I'm like starting to try to push, and I really truly didn't know what I was doing at all. And I wasn't really feeling any pain. And I'm like, I don't know when to even push because I'm not really feeling the contractions. Like, so it was very confusing to me. It was like, it still wasn't every 2 minutes that I was pushing and stuff. They were just kind of like watching on the monitor and they were like, okay, like do it now. And I'm like, but I'm not feeling anything right now. But they were like, do it now. So I'm like, okay, so let's do it now. And so I would do it. And I pushed maybe for like, I think it was like 30 minutes that I had pushed and still didn't feel any pain or anything. And sure enough, his little head came in. They were like, reach down and feel his head. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm doing this. I'm doing it. And then his little arm, my husband recorded it, his little arm. And then the whole thing. And then they immediately put him on my chest and I was just like, oh my gosh, I was just crying. I could not believe it. And it was like, it was just such a special moment because, you know, like to work so hard and to have that other experience and then to have this experience, you know, it's like, I'm so grateful I was able to truly like even get both experiences because then you can kind of appreciate, you know, things differently. But yep, they put him right on my chest. And then they were like, oh, he's a big boy. And I'm like, yeah, he is a big boy. Like, you know how? So we were like, oh, okay, he's like eight pounds or something. And then they came back and they were like, no, he's 9'6". And I was like, what? He's 9'6"? 9 pounds, 6 ounces. I didn't feel no pain. I didn't tear nothing. So I am like, what? Like,
we are geeking out over here. This is so cool.
Oh my gosh.
That is so amazing. How deserving. Like,
oh
truly.
Oh my gosh. I'm like, women are, we are powerhouses. Like, how? But it was so amazing. And then like, he started doing the little like, what is it? The crawl. Where they do, like, they look, immediately start looking for the boobs and kind of start like swimming their way upstream, following that line or whatever. And then they like, so he immediately started like doing that and navigating to nurse. And I was just like, this is like, oh my gosh, this is the way that it was, you know, intended to be. And I was just, yeah, I was blown away. I was just so happy. And I was like, this is also the difference between the team that you have to, you know, people who listen to you, who hear you, you know, who believe in you too and treat you like a person.
Yeah, that dignity matters.
Oh my gosh, it does so much. It does. It's like if that gives you that little extra oomph and boost too, you know?
Yeah. Gosh. Yeah. So what was your postpartum experience like after your VBAC?
Oh my gosh, for that one, it was so different. It was like the next day I was up and walking around and I'm like, this is what, like, I could do this after? Like I was, you know, bedridden for a week, you know, after my first. So like to be able to get up and move around and walk, like, I'm like, wow, we just take these little things for granted. But like for me, that was like huge that I could just get up and walk and I didn't have that pain. Like C-section pain when you like have to get out of bed and, you know, and all of that. So that was amazing. And I didn't really feel too much pain because I didn't tear. So really for me, it was kind of like I'm ready to go now. Like, you know, I can run a marathon. Like I felt amazing after. And even after that whole postpartum experience, like I didn't have any issues. We went home like the next day. I was like, even that, like we're able to go home the next day. I was just like, it was such a totally different experience. So different. Yeah.
Hi, Women of Strength. This is Lily. I wanted to personally chat about Needed's prenatal collagen. It was something I genuinely used during my VBAC pregnancy, and it became a non-negotiable part of my routine. What stood out immediately was how clean and simple it is. You're getting pure, hydrolyzed bovine collagen, nothing else, no fillers, no weird tastes, no chalky texture. It has neutral flavor that mixes perfectly into food or drinks, which honestly matters so much when you're pregnant. Collagen is especially important during pregnancy and postpartum because our body's natural collagen production actually starts to slow in our early 20s, and it's further impacted by stress, sun exposure, and just the overall demands of life. During pregnancy, birth, and recovery, your body is doing so much rebuilding. Collagen is rich in unique amino acids like glycine and proline, which are key building blocks that help support collagen production in the body and overall tissue support. For me, it felt like such a simple, intentional way to support my body through pregnancy, birth, and recovery. Needed continues to be a brand that I trust because they make supplements that truly support women through real life and real stages, and this was a big part of my journey. Get 20% off with code TVL. You can find the prenatal collagen and more at thisisneeded.com and type in code TVL at checkout for 20% off.
So awesome. So you have one more birth story. Tell us how that came about.
One more. So this, we actually were like, okay, I think after VBAC, we're like, okay, we know now any future pregnancies, like we're in the clear now, you know, we're golden. We were able to achieve that. And so we know like, oh, we're good. So I was planning for a home water birth and we hired a midwife and everything and we were seeing her. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like this is amazing. And this is completely different. And a lot of things that you do in like the regular standard, you know, like hospital way is so different than, you know, dealing with a midwife. But at my 20-week scan, she had noticed my placenta looked a little strange and she seen like holes in it. And so she referred me to an MFM and she wanted her to take a look. And so when she took a look, when I went to go see the MFM and she took a look, she says, your placenta looks rat eaten. Like that's how shredded it is. It's really, really bad. And she was confused as to like how it was even supporting the baby because it was that bad. But she's like, I'm pretty sure you have a creta. And she's like, and I don't want to, you know, like say that and put it on you. And she's like, we have to do another scan. But she's like, I'm pretty sure that it is a creta. So when I got, and I never had heard what that was before. I didn't know anything about that. And so when I looked it up, like I immediately like broke down and I was like, I cannot believe this. And so, you know, with the creta, it's like, you can't VBAC at all. You can't even attempt, you know, that one is a real automatic C-section, you know?
Yeah. For our listeners that don't know, Ashley, can you tell us what a creta is?
Oh, okay. Yes. So a creta is where the placenta attaches to the uterine wall. And if anytime you deliver, your placenta should normally just attach and it should come out on its own. But with a creta, that doesn't happen. And so it needs to be manually removed. But that process is a little tricky where you can hemorrhage from them trying to manually remove it. So sometimes if it's, you know, a very small one, they can do that. If not, sometimes you'll have to get a hysterectomy and they'll just have to remove the whole uterus to pretty much save your life.
Yes.
And so, yeah, so
that's and having a history of cesarean does increase the risk for a creta and does so with each accruing cesarean.
Yes. And so for me, that's exactly what happened too, was that this one, my placenta started growing into my scar, my old first scar, which made it even worse because I'm like, had that not happened, you know, like the doctor said, then my chances of this happening would have been a lot lower. Like, it could happen, but it's a very, very minimal chance of that happening, you know, if you did not have a C-section prior. So that was devastating for me. And to have to kind of go back into that mindset again of like, oh my gosh, like, I could lose my life. Like, my boys could grow up without a mom. You know, like, I had to kind of, I kind of feel like it would have been easier not knowing anything and then last minute kind of like hearing some bad news, because every day I'm now looking at my children and I'm like, if this doesn't go as planned, I could never see them again. Like, and so every day you have to like deal with that. And, you know, that was very, very hard for me. Very hard for me. And I had to tell my family, and they knew what I had went through the first time. So they too were like so scared. And my sister, like I said, she was an L&D nurse. And this time she transferred hospitals and she was in a trauma center. And so she's like, I think you should come here. And she's like, I know that they have done a Creta before. And she's like, so I think that you should come here. And like, they're really, really good. They're on it. They know what they're doing. So I'm like, okay, I'll come out there. But I'm like, but that's, you know, that's in New York. I'm like, our family's here. And, you know, I have two toddlers and I'm pregnant. Like, how are we going to do that? And where are we going to stay? And after a while, you can't continue to keep flying back and forth. So, you know, so when I went to see the doctors, they were saying like, I needed to really be there for like 2 months prior. So that was pretty rough to have to like pick up your whole family and move to this other state temporarily and try to maneuver that, you know, where my husband still had to work here. So, you know, he had to kind of fly back and forth. So a lot of it I was managing by myself, you know, with the toddlers and being pregnant and the whole condition on top of it. And so that was a lot. And like, I remember them not giving me, I guess it was because I was like squeezed in last minute and my sister worked there. So she kind of like got me hooked up with them. But I remember like not getting the treatment that I needed. And I became so much more terrified because I'm like, they're not returning my phone calls. They're not answering. Like, I have so many questions and they're not like, I just don't understand. And it didn't help the situation at all. So it was a lot of stress going on during that time. And I remember like 2 weeks before, I said to my husband, like, I have to get in the right headspace again. Like, I know that I can't stop Akrita and I can't do anything about it. But I know that the energy that I'm going to carry into it right now is not in a good space. And so I was like, I have to really, truly kind of get into a better space. And we ended up renting a hotel near the hospital because the hospital from where like my family lived was an hour away. So we had to constantly keep going back and forth. So we ended up renting a hotel for like the last 2 weeks, and I was able to like get in the headspace, and I was able to have all of my conversations with God. And after a while, a certain peace came over me where I was like, no, I'm going to be okay. I'm going to be okay. Like, this story, I think is supposed to help someone. It's supposed to do something like my story. So I know that I'm going to be okay. And I was like, I don't need to worry anymore. And so that piece like carried me through the whole time. And I remember there was like this one song that I was listening to, and that one song just kept replaying in my head. I had to have my scheduled C-section 34 weeks because they don't want you to go past a certain time because you could bleed out still. They don't want you to go into labor on your own due to you bleeding out. So it's always a scheduled C-section. Usually it's between like 32 or 34 weeks. And then, yeah, and baby will have to go to the NICU and will have to get like a steroid shot so that their lungs can, you know, try to develop and stuff before, since they're not ready. So I had to go through all of that process. And like that week prior is when like the hospital got it together. And that's when it was like appointment after appointment after appointment. And like, you have to see so many different people. So because it's such a serious condition and, you know, a life-threatening condition, you have to see a team of like 30 doctors. So you have like the trauma team, you have the oncologist, you have to see, you know, who's the cancer doctor. And they were saying like, you have to see the cancer doctor because the placenta cells act similar to cancer cells. And so he's the only one who can try to like remove the uterus and the placenta. And so you have to see him. We had to see like a urologist. We had to see like all these different people, the regular doctors, the anesthesiologist. The room was so chaotic. There's so many people that you have to see. And everyone has to be on board. Everyone has to be on the same page, the same team. Everybody has to know the plan. And it's really like a specialized team of doctors. But that experience is so different. Like going into the hospital, I had to get it's an A-line, which is like they put it into your leg. And that gives you a better blood pressure reading. So it's a little bit more stable. And so they're like putting that in, but then it's not working. And so they're like, it's not working. We can't get it. And I'm like, not this all over again. So that was like stressful. They ended up finally getting it. You have to get an epidural, which is a very different epidural, I feel like, than the previous one I got. And what else? So yeah. And then they begin the process. And obviously, like, you're under general anesthesia unless you have to go through with the hysterectomy, then they will put you fully under. So for the first part, I was on general anesthesia. So I was awake during that. I remember the shakes still happening again. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is the worst part. But they ended up bringing baby out. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I could hear his cry. And I was like, oh, okay, he's safe, he's good. And then in that moment, they bring him over for me to like try to kiss him. And I start passing out again. And I'm like, oh, so I couldn't even kiss him. I couldn't really see him or anything because my body just started shutting down again. And then they like did, I guess, some more anesthesia or gave me some kind of medication or something. And it ended up passing and I was fine. And then all I hear was, yay, the placenta detached itself. And so the whole room like erupted and everyone was just so happy. And they were like, oh my gosh, like this is great news. This is amazing. And the oncologist, the cancer doctor, he's like, oh, well, I'm not needed here anymore. And he leaves. And I'm like, yes, bye. See you. But it was just like, it was such a beautiful moment too. Like, you know, although everything happened the way that it happened and me going through that and stuff, I was still able to, you know, at least keep my uterus, the placenta detached. And then they were able to give me like a horizontal incision too. So I was excited about that. Yeah. But they did say like right where they suspected the accreta, that's exactly where it was. So it was fully attached, but it just happened to dissolve itself. And I'm like, well, no, this was the conversation I had with God earlier, because I'm like, I specifically said, I just wanted to detach. I don't know how you're going to do it. I don't know what, but this is what needs to happen. Yep. And so it did. And then they closed me up and transferred me over to the recovery room, and baby had to go to the NICU. So he was in the NICU for about 11 days. And that was a whole nother experience too, to have to do that. And I know like 11 days wasn't really that long, but it was very hard for me because I had to go back and forth to the hospital. But then I also like was in pain from my own surgery. And then I also had my two other toddlers. So it was challenging to leave them. It was challenging to leave him. And so I just was like, you know, I'll have to do whatever I have to do to try to get him out as quickly, as soon as possible. So I did as much skin to skin as I could, you know, and tried to pump so that he could, you know, have breast milk. And thankfully he came out breathing on his own. And yes, so he was 4 pounds, 11 ounces. Yeah, a little tiny guy, but now the troublemaker of the house. Yeah, so, and that was pretty much it for that one for my Akrita.
Wow, what a story. You've been through so many ups and downs, and I think as a whole, these conversations really matter. So thank you for sharing them with us, Ashley. It means so much to us to get to hold space for your stories.
No, thank you for allowing me this space. This was amazing.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. You went through so much. And I think it just is such a testament to of your strength and also of your faith in what you're able to hold on to and how, like, yes, you were given a hard experience and then the gift of like an essentially what it sounds like a pain-free birth, which is so rare. Like every experience was so rare, which is so cool. Yes. Like, you're so special. I hope you know that. In every experience, it's so rare. Yeah. And then to get Akrita, it's like, I believe that our challenges are as specific to us as the good things. And the way that you were able to see the good things that were laced in your story with the Akrita, like having the placenta detach on its own, and you saw that that was a specific thing that you were hoping for that happened. And then even within the NICU time, like, then it dumped the trial of having to navigate your kids and leaving your baby and then leaving them and being far, like, still being far away and healing, like, your body, all that. So,
yeah,
I am just in awe of your strength emotionally, mentally, physically, what you're able to do, what you've been able to overcome. And I know you said that you hope your story will inspire somebody. It's inspired me. I know it's inspired Lily, and I'm so glad that you came today to share.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much. That means so much to me.
Well, outside of being just an amazingly resilient mom and woman, you also teach parents how to have a more calm and confident parenting experience. Can you share with us a little bit about that before we go?
Yes. So, from my own experience with all of these boys here, they give me a run for my money. But I have really realized and understood just how misunderstood our little children are. And I realized that this foundation that we set for them is so important and it's so critical. And you know, growing up, like, we all kind of grew up around the same time and our childhood was just so different. And I know, you know, for myself, I come from 6 of us. And so, you know, our dad was pretty tough. And, you know, a lot of beliefs that he has is similar to a lot of the grandparents today. And it just did not sit well with me. And I'm like, there's just, it's something else that we're not understanding and that we're not actually taking the time to understand or to learn about our children and about their behavior. And so that kind of, you know, with my own, I have one son who people would say is a bad child, you know, or he's difficult or he's disrespectful or he's trying to manipulate and control and all these different things. And once I started really observing, I started noticing certain things and I'm like, that's not the case at all. Like, a lot of times they're just really misunderstood. And we as parents just, we kind of just follow like the programming really of what we have been used to raising up, you know? And so I just started saying, you know what, I'm going to be a little bit more intentional with my parenting, and I'm going to start to observe certain things, and I'm going to start to try certain things and learn certain things and do different things and see how that plays out and see how it works. And, you know, on that journey, I've just learned so much. My boys teach me so much every single day. There's some type of like aha moment or realization or something that they teach me about understanding children. And so now I try to help other moms, you know, go through that too, especially with like challenging behavior, you know, and those meltdowns and tantrums that's like so frustrating and triggering for, you know, for us as adults, and really try to get to like the root cause and understanding that. And I feel like once parents do, you're able to approach your child a little bit differently, you know, and that's kind of been my mission, is helping moms do that.
Amazing. So where can people connect with you?
I need to look this up.
It's Ashley Adina on Instagram. That's where I am. Yes, at Ashley Adina.
Can you spell your last name for us?
Okay, so it's Ashley and then Adynah.
Perfect. And you're on the socials.
Yes, yes.
I love it. I have a girlfriend who's also a mom of four boys, and she told me there's no such thing as a bad kid. And I tell myself that all the time, because so often our little boys are put in environments where they're just not meant to thrive.
No.
And I just, I love what you do.
And they get labeled and sometimes drugged and all these different things, and it doesn't need to happen. You know, you just really have to study and learn your child, and each child is different, you know?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, well, thank you so much for being on today.
You.
It was such a joy to have you.
Oh my gosh, this was amazing. Thank you so much for everything you ladies do.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Head over to thevbacklink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbacklink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
This episode featured ads for Needed. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. These products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode and for being a part of our community. One of my favorite parts of the VBAC Link is the community itself. When I was pregnant and planning for a VBA2C, the VBAC Link community group on Facebook truly became a virtual village for me. It's where I could see real VBAC stories, ask questions without judgment, and get encouragement from people who genuinely understood what I was preparing for. If you are planning a VBAC and want support as you get ready, head over to Facebook and search the VBAC Link community, because women of strength become even stronger together.